and welcome to Quarter Time Podcast. I'm Lucy G.
And I'm Lucy P.
And we're here to bring you all the netball goodness you never knew you needed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to part two of our Netball Nations Cup mini-series. Apologies for the slight delay. We had a few logistical and practical issues before this episode, including one suspected broken arm, but all is fine now. And Luce, what a corker of a series. How much did you enjoy that one?
So much. Well, I did enjoy it and I also hated it for a couple of reasons. But I thought it was really thrilling, fascinating, really captivating series for a whole heap of reasons. I think as well, there's so many talking points to come from this series that I kind of don't even know where to start.
Yeah, I honestly feel like we could write several books on the topic of this one specific series. But speaking of talking points, what have we got coming up in today's episode?
So today's episode, we are going to bring you our three-word summaries from each game. Three-word summaries are back. They are back. And we're both going to name our player of the series and also recap some of those key talking points from the series overall. Then we're going to bring you our chat with Uganda superstar shooter Mary Cholok, where we discuss their performance at the Nations Cup, what the She Cranes national program is like behind the scenes, Coach Fred, playing for national pride, and when she plans to take her journey down under, and so much more. It was a really fascinating conversation. I absolutely loved talking to her. Well worth a listen to get some more insight into a player who we know and love very well from the Netball Super League.
Amazing. So let's dive straight into our three-word summaries. Mm-hmm. First game of the Netball Nations Cup, we had the Constellation Cup rematch between Australia and New Zealand. Australia coming out on top 63-50. And my three-word summary was doing diamonds things.
Yep.
Very impressive performance from the Aussies and a number of super slick combinations out on court. And this game also saw a debut for Silver Fern Georgia Heffernan, despite only being originally picked as a training partner. It was a bit bizarre, the lack of chatter on the broadcast around this, with Malasala seemingly out of favour in the first couple of tests, as I think it was a huge talking point. It was a decent debut for Georgia Heff, and interestingly, she had three different goal defences up against her in this game. Although I did feel she went missing a little bit at times, but that's to be expected in your debut against Australia. The stats are pretty even for both teams. Besides the general play turnovers, Australia only had 13 to New Zealand's 22. So Australia's trademark clinicality won them this match, along with blistering first and last quarters, which they won by 5 and 8 goals, respectively. Sheesh.
Yeah, doing diamond things is absolutely the correct summary for that one. Next up then was England versus Uganda. England coming away victorious 62-56. And I've gone for saucy shooting combos. I think for me, both attacking ends were on fire in this game. And the Helen and Eleanor combination in the first half and the Mary Irene combination throughout. I was trying to think of, like, you know, when we do like Cardby and Fishwell.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was trying to think of one for Mary and Irene.
Is it Mary?
Mary, well, we normally do surnames, don't we?
Oh, yeah. Yarlock? Doesn't really Yarlock? Work, does
no.
it?
No, doesn't have the same ring to it.
We'll workshop it.
But yeah, cracking from them. I felt the defensive units were exposed a little bit at times, probably more working individually rather than as units. Uganda managed to pull back an 8-goal deficit in quarter two to almost level the game going into the final break. But the Roses were able to grind it out. Credit to some errors from the Ugandan midcourt, sadly. Although I think we have to give a huge shout out to Margaret Bagala, who had the most goal assists on court of 24. I absolutely love her.
Yeah, what a gal. Next up, it was New Zealand versus Uganda, and New Zealand took the win 65-60. And I said for my three-word summary, very little in it.
That's four words.
Is that no? In it's one. I'm going for in it.
Okay. I don't know if I can let you get away with that.
Maybe. We'll move on. But this was a cracking match, lots of flair and creative play, and the lead changed hands quite a few times. It was actually much closer than the World Cup encounter, where Uganda only put up 44 goals. So really impressive to see their improvement since then. Interestingly, in this game, Knowles only made two changes to move Kate Heffernan into wing defence and bring on Maddie Gordon. I personally think that particular Ferns combo that played the second half of this game was definitely their strongest one from this Nations Cup. The Souness Gordon Heffernan midcourt combo is sensational. You did feel a little bit that Uganda were flagging towards the end, although they did get three of their six games in the last quarter, according to the stat sheet. So hats off to Mohamed and Kadondi, as to be fair, day out against Grace Dwecky is not an easy one.
Yeah, 100%. I agree with you, the midcourt, but I also love Taylor Earle in this series. So I don't know as soon as Gordon...
She hadn't entered the chat yet in this stage. Yeah,
she hadn't. That is correct. Next up then was England versus Australia, with Australia taking a narrow win this time, 61-59. And I've gone for an intriguing tussle. I really enjoyed this one. For the most part, it was a cracking display from both sides. The ball speed was redonkulous at times, and the way that the Diamonds were able to inject that power off the bench was so impressive. Like, Kira Austin came on and just shot 100%. As you
casual.
Do.
Yeah.
Right? There was a lot to like from the Roses lineup. I think Amy Carter did a real number on Liz Watson, who was sent to the bench in quarter three. That doesn't happen very often. Of course, she had an electrifying third quarter. I remember being sat in the arena like, oh, England just can't win enough ball. And then quarter three comes out and they're like, yeah, shut up, Lucy. She did nothing but win ball. But the weak link for me was surprisingly Helen Housby on her 100th cap. Congratulations, by the way. Amazing achievement. But this is probably one of the weakest games that we've seen from her in quite some time. She shot 16 from 21 at 76%, had five general play turnovers, and for me, just went missing for huge parts of the game. It really just wasn't her day. And you just think, maybe if she'd been firing, that we could have just picked them. And actually, Jess referenced missed shots as like one of the key reasons that they lost that game, which I think is a little bit harsh, but there's also some truth to it.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't remember the last time that Helen's shooting percentage began with a 7,
right?
Like at international level or otherwise, really. Like we're so used to seeing, you know, 90s, high 80s consistently. It was a real shame for her to have an off day, but, you know, still a really decent match. Next up then, we had Australia versus Uganda, our first game up in Leeds, and Australia took the win 63-49. And I said a historic contest. This was the first international test match between Australia and Uganda, and it did not disappoint. The scoreline only really started to blow out in the second half once Australia found their groove. Uganda were having to work so hard in attack. I found they often use a lot of lateral passes and play that real possession style, but that doesn't totally work against Australia because they track so hard and take their feet all the way to the ball. Uganda just needed to explore some more angles and different options, as the Aussies were ball side on absolutely everything. I think we saw as well the superior endurance of the Aussies win out. They just can maintain that consistency across quarters so well, and they had the ability to rotate players and bring on fresh legs. They actually made three times the number of changes as Uganda did in this one.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I do think fitness was like probably one of the biggest letdowns for Uganda in this one, understandably. But actually, we sort of talk a little bit about that, about their national program or lack thereof. So I think it's understandable. But yeah, that's just a work on point for them.
Yeah, defo.
And the final game then before the final series was England versus New Zealand, a must-win game for both sides. And England came out on top 58-57. And I've said skin of teeth. This was such a stressful game. Even my watch heart rate monitor was getting involved. It thought I was doing a workout, which is pretty embarrassing.
I fully gasped it and woke Austin up. Honestly, like, he was asleep. And I was watching it, obviously, because it was very early in the morning. And I, when Fumi got that last intercept at the end, I did the loudest gasp anyone's ever done. And then I was obviously screaming. So, yeah, he was waking up.
Obviously. Honestly, the things that our poor partners have to put up with.
Oh yeah, shout out, absolute shout out to the netball widows that are Ben and Austin, by the way, what they have to put up with.
Oh dear. But no, a great game. We finally got to see Amarangi Malasala on court, who played 37 minutes but only shot 6 from 7. But then again, when you're paired with a player like Grace, it doesn't necessarily matter. She did have the second most centre pass receives as well, to be fair to her. So she was doing a chunk of work. And I was actually quite surprised by her performance. I found her to be more dynamic than Georgia Heffernan, actually. Mm. And I'd like to have seen her earlier in the competition. Also saw a debut for Taylor Earle, who we mentioned earlier. But shout out to Maddie Gordon, who was missing due to head injury protocol. But I thought Taylor was exceptional. She had 25 feeds in 35 minutes of gameplay, which equates to a projected 42 feeds across 60 minutes, assuming she'd be able to keep up the same rate throughout. Those are some big girl numbers, okay?
Yeah.
I thought she was extraordinary. For New Zealand, though, defensively, I think they were caught out in this one. I found Kalika to be highly ineffective against Housby in this game, who was more on her usual form. Still not perfect, but Kalika just couldn't do anything about her. We also saw the injection of Fumi Fidoju about 4 minutes left of the game, which I find a questionable decision to bring her on that late. And I would argue, actually, that we've not seen her used as effectively this tournament. She did come on in goal defence, thankfully, not wing defence or goalkeeper. But I don't know, just the way that she's being utilised, I don't think it's speaking to her strengths. But I think the question is, like, is she our best impact player now? Like, I don't know.
I definitely think she is our best impact player and can come on and make an impact pretty much at any time. But I do think you utilize her best if you give her a little bit of time out there. So like a half or a quarter. And I think goal defense is the one. I don't actually think it worked in wing defense. And previously I've been a pro put Fumi in wing defense and she can win ball. But actually I think probably because she plays so much netball domestically at goal defense, that's a better place for her to come on. And she's better to come on at the back end of the game when the ball speed has slowed slightly and she can really go out and hunt ball. But yeah, it's. I think we're definitely still working out the best way to deploy her.
Yeah, I don't think we're getting the best from her or from the defensive unit as a whole yet. So some things to work on there. But England, I think, were quite wasteful with the ball that they won in this game. Their gain-to-goal rate was just 50% to New Zealand's 69. A big issue for me is that they led by 7 in the fourth quarter. So why did we only win by 1 with a last-gasp interception? Fern scored 8 of the last 10 goals.
Wow.
Right? That's problematic.
Yeah, definitely. It sort of went downhill from there, didn't it? Anyway, we'll get to that. Next up then was the third, fourth playoff between Uganda and New Zealand. New Zealand taking the win 62-57. And I said the shooter showdown. Both shooters were outrageously good in this game, with Mary shooting 45 from 47 at 96% and Grace putting up 50 from 53 at 94%. Also, Grace's 1,000th goal for the Ferns came in this game after just 31 tests. Incredible.
Insane.
And Taylor Earle was a revelation. Just the freedom to let ball go in this game. She had 38 feeds. There just was not enough gains across the Silver Ferns defensively, pretty much for the whole series. Similar problems to what they had at the World Cup, not winning off ball, etc. But that's usually their identity, their ability to really come out and win clean ball and the zone and everything, but they've somehow lost it. I don't know what needs to change for them. You know, maybe they need some new blood in the program. Obviously, we've got the ANZ Premiership starting in the not too distant future. We'll see, you know, what some of those up and coming defenders can do. But yeah, I don't know how they can get that identity back.
Yeah, I think some new blood would be a good idea, just to, if nothing else, to challenge the existing players a bit more and to, you know, kind of put their selection under threat a little bit. You know, they've got the likes of Karis Stith, who's a real promising talent. You know, maybe we could see her brought into the mix. I don't know, but something does need to happen for me.
Yeah, but looking at it from a Uganda perspective, they will have been gutted to have lost this one. And it just came down to a few individual errors in those crunch moments. But the experience gained and the lessons learned from not just this game, but the whole Nations Cup overall will be so invaluable.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
That was a bit of a Jess Thirlby phrase there from me, wasn't it? Lessons learned, invaluable. Trademark.
No comment. And of course, then the grand final between England and Australia. So England lost 69-49. And my three-word summary is absolute bloody train wreck. Maybe that's a little bit too harsh. I don't know. But given that this was England's worst loss to Australia since 2016, I believe it was that they said on commentary, another 20 goal loss. I'm sort of struggling to remember this game a little bit because I really switched off during the third quarter where it just got completely out of control. And it was painful to watch for me as an England fan.
Yeah, Luce, I woke up at 5 a.m. for that.
Mate.
It was not good.
No
aspect of it was good. Yeah.
I just thought, you know, England were sloppy, they were wasteful, they were letting themselves down on the basic skill execution. Australia, on the other hand, were slick, clinical. Australia only had 11 general play turnovers in a final, which is just insane numbers. And there was 19 for England. 11 general play turnovers in a final. Outrageous. Like how do you combat that when they're just not making any mistakes? What can you do about it?
No, you can't do anything. Simply roll over, go home.
Belly up, fetal position. For me as well, though, the selections made prior to the game and the changes made during the game were an interesting one. There were 22 separate changes made throughout this game. I thought it was questionable not starting Amy Carter in wing defence, given that she had the best record against Liz Watson throughout the series, sent her to the bench in the pool stage match. We kind of shoehorned Fumi into wing defence. She hasn't had the time to embed herself really in any position across court, particularly wing defence. Mm. But I felt like we just put her in there to have her on court. Sasha Glasgow as well was thrown on during this game with no prior minutes to the series. And I'm just struggling to see how players are meant to get confidence from these decisions.
Yeah, I actually thought the second quarter changes were way too fast. We shouldn't have made all those changes after the first quarter. I think tactically we needed to change and execution wise, but I think those players needed a bit more time to stay out there and settle and feel the game. And I do think that the changes were a bit bizarre for me in this one.
Yeah, but the one change that needed to happen much earlier that didn't was bringing Hannah Joseph on for Nat Metcalf. And I feel Nat is an extraordinary player, but I do feel that her Achilles heel in recent years is Australia. I think she matches up against the likes of...
They've got the code, haven't they? They've got the code.
Yeah, yeah.
Like some kind of cheat code for Nat Metcalf. They've downloaded it in Australia and they know it.
Yeah, but like against New Zealand where she can punch through, like she is absolutely phenomenal. And we saw some great play from her. But, you know, she had 11 goal assists in 45 minutes. Hannah Joseph came on. She had 7 goal assists in 15 minutes.
Wow.
But that was the one change that needed to happen significantly earlier. And actually, England had a worse loss margin to Australia in this game than Uganda did, who are ranked 4 below them. And I'm not taking anything away from Uganda, but from an England perspective, that is concerning.
It's trouble.
And Jess said in the post-match interview that she was proud of the fight back. And I was like, where was this fight back? Can you please point out to me where this was? Because I just didn't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the main issue is just for England, the inability to back up results. Quad Series 2022, we've said it before. We drew with Australia in the first round, absolutely smashed by them in the final. Same thing happened at the Netball World Cup. Same thing happened at the Nations Cup. Why is it that we can beat people on one day and then 2 to 3 days later, we get spanked by 20 goals? I mean, what is that about? Why are we so on the back foot?
I think we're being tactically outsmarted. Like we talk about learnings all the time in netball, but Stacey actually learns her lessons from the pool stage games and then comes out tactically and just wipes the floor with people in the following game.
I think it's just also as well, like lining up for the opposition. Like maybe we put too much focus on like, oh, we're putting our best players out on court in their best positions. But actually, do we need to be thinking more about who are they going to put out and what are we going to do to stop that?
Well, this is why I think Amy should have started. As much as I adore Fumi, this is why Amy should have started in wing defence. She had cracking game against Liz Watson. And you know that Liz is going to start in wing attack. Let's be real.
Yeah,
you know she's
exactly.
starting there. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Moving on then to discuss our player of the series. The official player of the series was Paige Hadley. Very, very well deserved as she was so solid for the Diamonds. She's really just a safe pair of hands and an absolute workhorse. She provides so many options in attack. And yeah, she's definitely someone that you want on court for you now. But we have also chosen our own player of the series. So who have you gone for, Luce?
Yeah, so honourable mention, obviously Hadley, very well deserved, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would also put Grace Smeki up there. I think she carried a lot of pressure on her shoulders really well, especially with the vice-captaincy. Bruce, for me, was probably the defender of the tournament, although it wasn't a particularly defendery tournament, if I can say that. Wasn't that much ball being won. I think it was a little bit more about the attackers and the middies in this one. But I've actually gone for my player of the series for Margaret Bagala. So she played every game 60 minutes in centre, which already has me feeling out of breath. But she was up against the likes of Imogen Allison, Maddie Gordon, JLP, like these world-class centres from the top three nations in the world. And she did not skip a beat. She had 24 goal assists against England, 23 against the Ferns, 25 against the Diamonds, and 20 in the third, fourth playoff. So really good consistency and good numbers for a centre in terms of the goal assists. And for me, the biggest thing is she's just that steadying presence. She's reminiscent to me of Jade Clark in that respect, but with that incredible vision into the shooters. I'm just so impressed by her consistently when she steps on court for Uganda.
Yeah, I am dying for her to come over to the Super League. Like, please. I think I would love to see her.
I'm afraid it's too late for 24, Luce. You're going to have to start your campaign a bit earlier next time. Who have you gone for then for your player of the series?
So we've actually got a heavy Uganda bias in this one because my player of the series is Irene Iyaru. Honourable mention as well to Mary Chollock and to JLP. You mentioned earlier, I thought she was extraordinary this series. But again, Irene, same as Margaret, she played every single minute. She shot at 93% across the whole tournament and she is a workhorse in attack. In the England game, she shot 18 from 19 at 94%, plus had 20 centre pass receives, which was the most on court for both teams. The New Zealand game and the Australia game, she shot at 100%. She had just 11 general play turnovers across the series, so across four games. So that's, 2.5-ish each game. I thought she was absolutely extraordinary. I think she led the team really well as captain. Her combination with Mary Chollock is just incredible. But because she's that goal attack, wing attack slide as well, her precision on the feed into the shooters, she just knows where to put it. She knows where they want it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she's another one I want in the Super League, please and thank you.
Yep, absolutely. I support that message. As always, we would love to know if you guys agree with our picks, who's your player of the series, anyone from England who you thought really stood out. I thought we had some good performances, but not necessarily consistency across all the games. I thought Helen was great, except for the Australia game. But yeah, it's really interesting one. So we'd love to hear what you guys think.
Now, a couple of key talking points from the series overall. I mean, first up is probably the closeness of the results bar the final. How impressive were Uganda considering their world ranking and the disparity in terms of resources, Luce?
I have to say, I was a bit worried coming into this series because I was thinking top three nations against world number seven. You've got to think maybe there's going to be, some blowout games, maybe that Uganda are going to struggle a little bit. they did not struggle. They were mixing it with the big guns. And I think that other teams in world netball need to take a really close look at what they at performances they were putting out there. I think South Africa, Jamaica, Malawi, you know, they need to watch their backs because Uganda are coming. And they did so well consistently as well to really push on into that final game. I would say that one thing from a Uganda, not really from a Uganda perspective, but from an overall perspective, is I found there was a sense of a little bit of disrespect towards Uganda. And maybe I'm being a bit hypocritical because I also said I was a bit worried about them coming in. But one or two comments, particularly Stacey with the unorthodox comment, that really didn't sit well with me, because I think that there, you know, there isn't a set style of netball. It's just that Uganda play a different style to necessarily Australia, but that doesn't make it unorthodox in a way. And yeah, just a general lack of respect towards Uganda, not learning their names, the players' names, which are not difficult, you know, and actually that's part of the commentary. And also that's what helps bring fans along as well, you know, to learn and to get time to invest in these players. From a Uganda perspective, I think massive positives to take away. They played over and above their world ranking of seventh. And I think, you know, it was like we were watching a quad series of the top four nations.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you've just said there. Surprise, surprise. And actually, it's not like us. But I do think the comments as well around the sort of a certain level of disrespect against Uganda, you know, commentary mispronouncing names or getting names wrong or not pronouncing names at all and just calling them by their positions, which is a real bugbear of mine. And the unorthodox thing, we can't just, I know that New Zealand and Australia have dominated world netball for so long, but we can't just call anything that isn't their style unorthodox. Like, world, global netball has changed now, and that's not the way it is. And we need to get past it. It wasn't even just Stacey who said unorthodox. We need to move past this now as a matter of urgency.
Yeah.
And I think pay them the respect that they're due.
Yeah, Erin Delahunty, of course, put out a great tweet about that as well. So definitely check that out for some really informed commentary on this issue, which I think is a big one.
Yeah. And the other sort of major talking point for me was the implementation of the new rules. Mm. I found this series to be very inconsistent in terms of the implementation, particularly the short pass rule. There was, which game was it? It was an England game. It might have been the England-New Zealand game, actually, when I was like, hang on, we should have been called for about seven short passes and we weren't. Yeah. But then in one of the Uganda games, they were called for freaking everything. And I could not wrap my head around it. I think there's more work to be done here.
Oh, big time. I mean, obviously, those rules have only just come into effect on the 1st of January or whenever it was. So the umpires themselves are still getting used to them. But definitely that needs to be looked at, because there was someone I was like, you couldn't even get a hand through those. Yeah. I mean, maybe it's the TV angle that we're seeing. Obviously, you know, we're not there in the arena, so it's difficult to see. But a massive work needs to be done on consistency across umpiring, I think. And especially for the things like the cautions and the non-cautions, the kind of advancements of penalties and things like that just needs, a bit of tweaking.
Well, funny you should say that. I do think there's a conversation that needs to be had around unconscious bias in umpiring for this series. Gary Patrick Brown, a friend of mine, hey, Gary, he did some tweets on both weekends picking out some of these penalty stats. And in the New Zealand-Uganda game, he tweeted that the Ferns had 27 penalties at one point between Jury and Berger, 15 and 12 apiece, versus 17 between Mohamed and Kadondi, 11 and 6 apiece. Yet Uganda were the ones who received the chats and the advancements. And I don't think this is something that can be ignored or not acknowledged. Do we need to advance umpiring in game so that they can actually see the stats objectively for themselves at quarter time, half time, three quarter time, to try and counter any unconscious bias? Like, I don't know, but something needs to change for me.
Well, I think that's a great shout because obviously the stats are recorded live. So I can't really see why they wouldn't be able to potentially introduce that. I would love to hear some thoughts from umpires about this as well. And also, guys, let us know your thoughts from home on what you think. But I definitely think it's an issue that we need to be addressing in terms of just making it fair. Like, that's the whole point of netball, isn't it? It's supposed to be a fair game for everyone to be equally contesting. So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, totally agree. So coming up next, we bring you our chat with the incredible Ugandan shooter, Mary Czolak. We are absolutely thrilled to welcome Uganda's shooting sensation, Mary Czolak, onto the pod. How are you doing, Mary?
I'm good. I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I am so excited to talk to you. I'm feeling great. Have you recovered after Nations Cup?
Well, recovery in process has been like a day in between. So still not recovered, but from the excitement of the whole experience. But yeah, I'm glad that we did what we did and it, like, memories were really created during the Nations Cup. But yeah, I'm just looking forward now to the season starting in 3 weeks. So how excited. God.
3 weeks. Where has that time gone?
God, it just flew so quick. I used to hate January because January is so long. But now I feel like this is the shortest it has ever been.
Yeah.
Had a lot going on. And just before I know it, I don't even know what today is. Today is what? 30th.
30th, yeah.
A day left and then we paid.
Yeah. So, yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, no doubt back in the Lightning setup very, very soon. Yeah. But the Nations Cup was, for me, it was absolutely extraordinary. I think the netball world was completely blown away by Uganda's performance. And although you weren't quite able to get over the line to get yourself a win, you push all three nations all the way, all of whom are at least four places higher than Uganda in terms of world ranking. So there is so much to be proud of. So to start off, give us your overall reflections of the series from your perspective.
From my own point of view, I think like this was really good for Uganda. And the fact that we like get the privilege to play the top three is for us to learn as a country, and because we're such a young team as well, there's a lot of new girls, new squad who did not play in the World Cup, who just joined us. So this was a chance for our coach to know a kind of a setup that needs to be done. And for us, I think individual-wise, I think it's just very good for people to get out there and just get experience on international stage rather than just waiting for Commonwealth Games, World Cup. Those only take up, you only get to compete at the very higher level in 3-4 years. But this was really good after World Cup, following up with good performance after World Cup. I think it was good to showcase exactly that we need to improve every year so that we don't have like a big pause and then we have to go again. So it was really good overall. I think Uganda is so capable. When we put in the efforts, you can see the talent is there. Everyone plays their heart out when they step on. Like, literally, I played the whole games. Like, and I'm looking well. I was like, God, I did that. But I feel like every time you step out, you're like refreshing, however much you're tired. But the passion just keeps you pushing, and that's the beauty of it. When we're all together, we're all that molding together as a bond created, and it's always good, like, because we create a lot of memories through that. And I'm really privileged to be in such an environment.
Yeah, 100%. And actually, I think that pride and that passion is something that really shone through, not just from the World Cup, but from this tournament specifically. And that's one of the things that we love about Uganda and watching them play. And I remember at the World Cup in South Africa, it was the post-match press conference with Irene Iaru. And she said, to quote her, "We shall play our hearts out. If it means to die on court, we shall die." And it's just, that passion just exudes off of you. It's so infectious. So what does playing for that kind of national pride mean to you personally and to the wider Uganda squad?
I think it's just like inspirations, just be inspired by the challenges that we face on day to day. Like when we are playing, there's a lot of stuff that we don't meet as players, and we don't get the best facilities, we don't get the best funding, we don't get paid the best. And the only thing that we have is the love again for the game and to inspire the generation. I think coming from my own point of view, it's just like inspiring the young generation or the growth of netball, and to also to have more input in netball, because when we go out there, we do not give a reason for people to doubt the love we have for netball. And so when we go out there, we play it with all our heart, and we love netball. All athletes can resonate with this. Like the sport itself, when you go out there, you give it all your absolute best. And I think it's every athlete's nature when representing a country is the pride, and there's a lot of people looking after them, the young, the old, the retired, and it's just a lot of eyes on you, and it's, it gives you a lot to work for, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely does make sense. Have you had much response from the Nations Cup from people watching back at home?
Oh, God, yeah, we have lots of overwhelming messages from people I know, from my OGs who studied the same school with me, and they're like, oh, my God, I watched you on telly. That's so good. It's like, we're so proud of you. And it's those, like, messages that keep you pushing, like all the people watching and seeing how much you're inspiring the nation and women's sport, and how much it could be a big deal if everyone went on board. So it's that coverage we're looking for, especially in Uganda. Women's sport is not taken to be that serious. We don't have a lot of funding around it. And for netball is for us to use this opportunity to say, hey, let's shift the focus to us, because we are actually doing the most, you know, in a good way. And but yeah, it's just got a lot of messages from people back home watching. Some do not tune in live, but they do get updates from Twitter, TikTok, which is really an amazing thing to see, that at least even if people are not watching, at least people are being updated on Twitter and they're really following. And it's really beautiful to see.
Oh, that is really beautiful. And to, for you guys to go out there and to inspire not just Uganda, but the world, no matter where you're from, you inspire me, you inspire thousands of other, millions of other people. Like, it's absolutely incredible. And you spoke a little bit there about the sort of lack of resources that Uganda have. And we spoke a lot about this during the World Cup. We know that money is a huge problem in netball across the globe, but particularly for Uganda, there's no netball courts that meet international standards. And I read in an article that in the 2 months prior to the 2022 Commonwealth Games, the team was training on outdoor courts, like concrete courts, in the baking heat. And I think there's just a bit of a lack of awareness around the reality of some of the lack of resources and facilities and stuff that you guys have to work with on a daily basis. So can you tell us a bit about what the national program looks like? Do you have, you know, camps every month? Do you have strength and conditioning sessions, nutrition? How does the Uganda national team work?
Well, the last time I went, that was like 2022, when I got chance to train with the girls at least a month prior to the tournament. But the setup is normally like majority of the girls do still participate in their local league, which runs throughout the year. But apart from that, unless we have a major tournament going on or camps or series like we did, there will not be any kind of like camping throughout the year unless we have something going on. So it's not like we're on the program. So everyone is kind of like in their club. And if we get to call, we get assembled and be like, hey, you've been selected. So we're doing camp on this date and you have to show up. You have to show up fully because you leave everything you have all going on, school, student, go to school. And that's why it becomes really tough for you to continue showing up every time, each time you're being called for. And we are all young. We have a lot. We don't have money. That's the truth. Most of them are students. Some of them be in the middle of exams, you have to kind of reason with it. You have to choose what is the priority at this point. Majority we choose to go represent. And when we are throughout there, we do train a lot. Majority of the times we do not train indoor until at least 2 weeks to the tournament. If we are traveling, for example, in 2 weeks, that's when we will train indoor. But all the time we will spend in camp, we will train outdoors. And that's because all the training facilities we have to pay for. And I cannot explain why we don't have indoor facilities, because they are there. But it's just a few. It's about like two, if I could count them, in the whole country. So it is ridiculous. So we have to kind of work with what we have, as a federation has to work with what they have. And when we go to the tournament, we normally travel without money, and we just hustle it out. Like, I cannot really give you a program, because majority of the time when I'm being asked, what's your program? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just going to see what is there and just work with what we have and see where it goes. At the end of the day, the talent stands, and we still get to have good physique because we train very hard, even harsher conditions. I think that's give us the upper hand, but there's a lot that needs to be worked on. Like, need to train more indoors. A lot of risk injury factors that we force ourselves into that we could easily avoid, like training indoors, because we don't play outdoors when it comes to actual competitions. Training gear, we lack a lot as well. Shoes, name it, there's a lot that we don't really have, but we just have to work with what we have, because that's the way it is.
Mary, that is absolutely extraordinary to then, putting into context all of that, to then see your performances at things like World Cup, Nations Cup, and how well you guys have performed under such adversity is absolutely astonishing. And I think, you know, I was looking at the programme for the Nations Cup, and each of the nations pages, England, outside of the head coach and the assistant coach, England had 10 support staff, Australia had 6, New Zealand had 7, Uganda had just 2, and I believe they were both volunteers. There's also an article from Pulse Sports in Uganda that shared that Coach Fred has actually never been paid for his head coach role besides one gig in Namibia in 2021. But otherwise, he's not getting any remuneration at all. And I believe neither are the players. So where do you think that netball in Uganda would be if they had the same level of resource, or even a fraction of the resource, the finance, the infrastructure that the other top nations have?
Oh, I think it would have been miles away. It would have been such in a good place as a team. But again, all the resources there's been at times where the resources have been provided but being misused. And you cannot go around pinpointing people, because we are just players. Most of the time we stay out of the chaos and we decide like to block the external noise and whatever will distract us. So majority of the time we don't get to know what exactly has happened, why we're not being paid. We don't get explanations to things. But to get back to your question, I think if we had all this, even a fraction of what other countries will get, like England, and the support, the athlete support, and it's just like making sure we all meet the things that we need to meet as players, I think would have been miles away. And I think it's not that to say that, oh, we are really in pain or whatever, but at least to give you a picture of like what others have to go through. And it's not like not everyone is equal. Some people are really low, but it's the fighting and the resilience of the person, how they have to resist all these things affecting them, how they play and how the work rate they produce. It's just like the resilience of individuals is just outstanding. And that's why I'm so proud, even if we did not win any of these games during Nations Cup. It's just like the personal resilience of each individual was so strong. And that itself is a win. I will never say, we'll never ask for too much, but we do give everything we have.
You absolutely do. And, you know, it's a win, I think, by anyone's standards. You know, in fact, you guys had a smaller loss margin to Australia than England did. You know, we lost by 20. So, you know, there's so many positives to take out of that. And I think it's really interesting that you mentioned the kind of the stuff that's going on off court and sort of finances and stuff like that, because we know that sadly, despite the on-court success for Uganda, there are some issues off-court with regards to the national governing body. World Netball have stepped in and set up a normalisation committee to provide some support during this sort of transitional, quite difficult time. So how much has that off-court governance issues affected the playing group, if at all?
So all those issues that were off-court, we still... It massively affects us, because at the end of the day, we still hear whatever they're saying. It's like it's thrown at netball, and netball is us as well. But when that was happening during World Cup, we decided to just create a very strong bond between us as players to make sure we're not getting distracted with what was going on. And that's how that bone of sisterhood is still there. You can see it, like how everyone is just so mulled together. But it affects us so much, because at the end of the day, we see it on Twitter, everywhere, trending. It just affects you emotionally, and it gives you a lot of self-doubt. Why am I doing this? Am I even benefiting from these 5 years wasted? I've been in 5 years with the national team. I cannot imagine the previous girls who have retired with nothing to call that, well, this is what I've achieved from representing a country. When I walk on the street, nobody recognize me. But you have dedicated 10 years of your career, but nobody even knows how much you have sacrificed. So that's heartbreaking. All that, how we are governed, and it puts a lot of questions around your career choices and how much you benefit from it and how things you need to prioritize. So it's just, some people just end up walking away from it just like that. You end up seeing girls, she's really good and cool, and then it wakes up one day, she's just fed up, she cannot take it anymore. She just walks it up and does her own things, and you cannot blame it on the player. It's just like she's dedicated so much. At the end of the day, she doesn't benefit. Nobody even knows her name. So it just affects us so bad. Emotionally, it's just traumatizing. So either they do it intentionally or not, it just affects us so much. Yeah. But we give a lot to this game, and we give it our absolute best.
It must be so devastating to put your heart and soul onto court, and then for the stuff behind the scenes to be what lets you down. Like that must be really hard. But we know that Praskovia Pisankwotcha is one of the members of the committee, and of course she was in an assistant coach capacity for Nations Cup and for the Wales series. And you've spoken a little bit before about Peace and how much of an inspiration she is for you. So can you tell us a little bit about the role that she's played within Uganda netball in recent months and your relationship with her?
I think Peace has been always a role model to me, even coming into netball and growing up, seeing Peace is one person that inspired me to get out there and see what I can do in netball world. But again, Peace plays an important role in just inspiring the girls to just keep, not to keep quiet, that's one, to just keep making noise as much, because now we're trying to raise the athlete's voice more to make sure our voices are heard and our pains are being seen as well, because we tend to just lock it in and just persevere through it, and that's not the way to go about it, especially when people are benefiting from it. So Peace being part of the normalization committee, it helps a lot in helping raising players' voices for those who feel like intimidated, because we are not in the place whereby we can speak on our own, so we need a representative. So Peace is doing that role at the same, and on the other hand, as a coach as well, stepped in as assistant coach, which we could see in Wembley, massive difference. There's just a lot of assistants between Peace and Coach Fred. So it was really good to see, at least we have two coaches this time who are creating an impact and giving a lot of immediate feedback. And it was refreshing to see that, because we don't see that as much in our environment, especially. So it was good to see Peace perspective. And also she's really... she has been in it, like in a coaching environment. She's a player herself, so being using the experience she has from Super League into coaching, it is good to see her grow as a person. Like I feel so proud of her, and she's a mom as well. So it's just a lot of growth and a lot of inspiration continue to come up, and it's just good. It's just good to celebrate that and to witness that. But yeah, I'm really very proud of Peace and what she's achieved and what she's continued to achieve and to continue inspiring the young Ugandans.
Yeah, 100%. And she's just so, she's so likable. Like you can't speak to her and not like her. And I think that's one of the attributes that makes a really good coach, is that like the personality and being able to warm to people and connect with people. And that connection is something that Peace does so well. And it's great to see her sort of working alongside Coach Fred. So speaking of Fred, tell us a little bit about his coaching style and the influence that he's had on the She Cranes. Because it's not just netball that he's also coached handball, basketball. He's a really experienced, broader sports coach. So how has that potentially impacted the She Cranes?
I think like Coach brought so much to the team, like just his story as well. Many people don't know his story, why he's in netball. But I think he has been on a journey as an individual. Coach Fred was my coach when I was grew up so fast, but I was starting netball, 13, 14. And he was helping me with my grassroots netball. That's how it developed. So I've seen Coach Fred coach the national team, travel 3 days on a bus to go participate in a national team. So that he has been on a journey with the national team until today. And I cannot say enough how much he has sacrificed to be on the national team, regardless if he's paid or not. But he brings his coaching style. It's just... to let the girls embrace what they think they can do. It's just a lot of individual, allowing athletes embrace their individual strength, if that makes sense. Mm. And on top of that, just him adding on and making sure that at least you're seeing different perspective from a coaching view. So I think that's what his approach is more about, just allowing athletes to aim to be more creative. That's one. And to make sure you're leading yourself, and he gives guidance based on what you think you need. So he will not give you unnecessary feedback. He will tell you, and he's very straightforward. He will not sugarcoat nothing for you. He will just say the way it is, and you have to deal with it. So that's like the tougher part of him. So he will tell you the way it is. This is what you're doing, Mary. You need to do this. End of the story. So figure it out. I think he has been on a very big journey as well. And we love him. Uganda loves him. He has done sacrifice so much for netball in Uganda. And I think Uganda should be grateful that he has been there. And he's still there for the team. And I would wish him all the best. We always love him because he has sacrificed so much.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely extraordinary. I'd love to do a podcast with Fred one day to find out about his journey and how he transitioned from handball into netball. And, you know, maybe that's another podcast for another day. But speaking more specifically about Nations Cup, because I'm very conscious of time, I could just talk to you all day. There was a lot of excitement, obviously, building up to that historic first ever match between Uganda and Australia. And bar the third quarter where they managed to pull away, you only lost quarters 1, 2, and 4 by 3-1 and 2 goals, respectively. So what did you learn from playing Australia for the first time?
I just learned that it really plays so fast. Oh, my God. It's just before you know, we were just like head to head, And before we know it, the scoreboard is like my full ahead. I was like, how did that happen in like 20 minutes? So it was really fast. But I think Australia is really good in creating turnover when they need it. Like, I think they did a good job tiring us out, because the first quarter was just like head to head, and we just kind of have a turnover one and then chill out and then have a ball for 1 minute and then score. And I think because they had also a privilege of like such a massive bench, like anyone who will be brought, it's like fresher legs, even faster. And I was like, oh God, I've been in here for 40 minutes, so give me a break. And but they're really, like, really smart with the ball. And their defense is very hard to break through. Like, they put us in such a, like, in a zone, and they push us wide. And it's very hard to even if you go middle, you find massive WD in the middle ready to take you on. And you're like, where do I go? but they did really a massive, massive job. And that's the difference. We learned from it as a country to just kind of like have a broader bench. Whoever's brought on is having the same intensity. And I think we did not use our bench as much when we kind of substituted when we needed to, when somebody is actually knackered. That's when we needed a sub. But it's just us recognizing that and making sure, okay, this person needs a break. We bring this one who would do this. And for us also, players recognize when to switch the style of play, because majority of the times we did the same thing over and over again. And it was kind of like very much defendable. And even if we were struggling, we did not change the strategies. So that's something we need to learn moving forward, to have a couple, three things defensively, what we do, and attacking wise as well. But I think we struggled to bring the ball through a lot of times, and I had to exit a couple of times, which I love, by the way. But when there's a time where they had no options, I had no options apart from bringing back to line, and then we're back to square one. So it's just us seeing how we can have a lot of variety in our brackets, like making sure that if I exited, someone is coming to rescue me, because I'll be panicking for the second, for a whole second, like just for 1 second, I'm already panicking. Who do I give it to? Oh my God, come for me. But it's just for us to learn from it. I think I learned from it, as that whole experience is just to continue to grow, to make sure that I'm doing more and more to try to make my horizon broader. Not just holding shoes up, and make sure I'm having a lot to provide if I find myself in that position.
I mean, I certainly think you have a lot to provide, and I think you've become much more mobile in recent years. I think credit to some of the work done at Loughborough Lightning as well to really develop your game, and I think you're just on an upward trajectory. And I think you mentioned there the sort of pesky wing defence. Obviously for Australia, it was Sunday Ariyong. She played in wing defence for that game. So she wasn't up against you directly in goal shooter, goalkeeper. You mentioned prior to the series that you're excited to meet her and have a chat with her, because she's also African born, has a similar background. Yeah. Did you manage to catch up with her at all?
Oh yeah, we did. We had a coffee date on Friday before the games. So it was really nice. I had a catch up. I get to know a lot about her as an individual, which was really exciting. I think I found my new bestie now. And but I think it's just inspiring again to just see an African born, especially like if you like a refugee. I think it's more inspiring. Many people may not see that, oh, you're just African born, but it's like the story and the journey, how you moved into the country and now you're playing for the country, like Australia. That's a big deal. So I was really proud of what she has achieved at her young age. And just got to know a lot about like her story, her journey. And she is the second born. I'm the first born. I'm like, she's more chilled out. I am like responsible. And so it's just have that kind of a girl-to-girl chat, and just to get to know her a bit more.
Love that. Netball besties. That is so cute. We've spoken a little bit about you and your growth and your journey, obviously coming to Lightning, a few years in NSL, playing for Uganda. And every time you play, there's always a talk of a pending move to Suncorp Super Netball. And I think that you've proved beyond all doubt that you are absolutely good enough, but you've been very clear that you're in no rush to go over there. And at the World Cup, there was a brilliant interview that you did with my friend Chloe Merrill, where you said, when I go to Australia, I want to be the baddest shooter ever, which I am obsessed with. So where does this inner self-confidence come from? Because you just exude it.
I just think we tend to be rushed so much to make decisions based on what other people think where you should be. And I think it shouldn't be like that, especially in a career whereby you're in your phase whereby you're shining and whatever. We tend to make rash decisions. And I just believe where I come from in that is just a sense of if something is meant to be, it's going to happen in the best way possible. And I think I carried that kind of energy around. And so I think when my time comes, for sure, when I move to Australia, I'll make sure I'll be the baddest in that environment, and I will be in a good headspace, and I'm making sure my decision is not is it the one, is it the right move, you know what I mean? So I think my time will come, and when it's my time, it's my time. Nobody will steal that from me. I think I'm just waiting for that perfect opportunity, but I'm not at any point just lacking. I have a lot of blessings around me. Wherever I go, I believe blessings follow me. So I just embrace that. And I think where I'm meant to be, I'll finally be there. If I'm not meant to be, I'm just happy where I am.
That is absolutely beautiful. And I think there's a big life lesson that people can take from that sentiment. I think that's absolutely beautiful. And the perfect note for us to finish on. Mary, it has been such a privilege being able to speak to you. Thank you so much for coming on. And I can't wait to watch you tear up the court in Super League this year.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me, Lucy. It's been so nice chatting. It's good. It's good to recap this. It just brings a lot of open mind, kind of looking forward to something. So it's really nice to have this kind of talks and chat. It's really nice.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Quarter Time Podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the pod and follow us on social media at Quarter Time Pod for the latest netball updates.
We will have one more Nations Cup episode coming your way very, very soon, a part 3. So do keep an eye out on social media or wherever you get your podcast from for that one. No prizes for guessing that we will be chatting to an Aussie Diamond.
We would really appreciate it if you could take a moment to rate and review the podcast, as it helps other people to find us. If you enjoy listening to the pod, please let us know and do spread the word with your netball pals so even more people can get involved.
Take care, everyone, and see you soon. Bye.
Bye.